It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thanks for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. Broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 48 degrees under a light rain fog mist. It's been 48 degrees all day long. This rain is expected to continue at least until 1 a.m. tonight. East wind to 10 miles per hour today and tonight. For tomorrow, just a 50% chance of rain. Cloudy skies on Saturday with a high near 53. East winds expected to continue at 10. Coming up on the Midday Report, food truck owners and the city of Kodiak are entering into a dialogue about spots for food truck parking. Governor Mike Dunleavy has declared the legislature's budget defective and has sent layoff notices to state workers. And Raven, Alaska says it will buy 50 electric planes from a California-based company. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Barbara Klein. President Biden has announced the U.S. has administered more than 300 million COVID-19 vaccinations since he took office in January. But as NPR's Windsor Johnston reports, Biden has a way to go to reach his self-imposed deadline.
President Biden has set two goals: fully vaccinating 160 million Americans and administering at least one shot to 70% of adults by July 4th. Speaking from the White House, Biden said there's still time for the nation to get back on track.
So please, please, if you have one shot, get the second shot as soon as you can so you're fully vaccinated. If you haven't gotten vaccinated yet, get vaccinated now.
The administration says in recent weeks, vaccination rates have dropped in the U.S. from a seven-day average of 2.2 million shots per day to about 1.2 million. According to the CDC, roughly 65% of adults are at least partially vaccinated. Windsor Johnston, NPR News.
CDC Director Rochelle Walensky says the Delta variant is likely to become the dominant coronavirus strain in the U.S. It's more transmissible and makes people sicker. Iran held a presidential election today to succeed Hassan Rouhani. Polls closed a short time ago. As NPR's Peter Kenyon reports from Tehran, pre-vote forecasts gave a commanding lead to a hardline cleric who's under U.S. sanctions.
Turnout figures were not immediately available, but normally jammed Tehran polling centers saw fewer voters as the polls opened. Hardline cleric Ebrahim Raisi was expected to win the contest easily, with the former central bank governor, Abdel Nasser Hamati, running a distant second. At one polling place, Reza, a digital marketing specialist, pondered the question, what do Iranians want from their next president?
Well, what we want right now for all people, all our nation, is to have normal life.
Some Iranian media are quoting officials as saying results could be ready as early as Saturday afternoon. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Tehran.
The UN General Assembly has adopted a resolution condemning Myanmar's military coup and calling for an international arms embargo. In Fort Bend, Texas today, a celebration of the first federal Juneteenth holiday.
Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us.
The actual Juneteenth is tomorrow, June 19th, commemorating the day in 1865 that enslaved people in Texas were informed they'd been freed by the Emancipation Proclamation more than 2 years earlier. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Food truck owners and operators have entered into a dialogue with the city of Kodiak in order to find common ground with the city's plan to open up spots for food truck parking. Diane Million of the Million Recipes Food Truck and the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce met with Kodiak City Manager Mike Fenge during the Chamber's monthly meeting to discuss the technical aspects of such a plan. According to Million, who's a member of the Chamber, one of the more important aspects of the plan was the requirement that food trucks move every 12 hours.
They also weren't aware of how difficult it is sometimes to move your cart. So the board discussed it, and it sounds like what we're going to do now is have a more in-depth discussion between people that run food carts for a living and the city manager.
According to her, food trucks only need to move once every 2 years for an inspection by the fire chief. For her, it's a three-hour process to break down the food truck. Those are hours that she pays her employees for, all without making any revenue. Doing that on a daily basis would be prohibitively expensive. The current plan would see the city making 10 sites available for food trucks. It would also require a $500 license to operate on city property. Currently, all food trucks operate on private property, presumably with deals with the respective private property owners. Million says she likes the idea and believes there's more to be discussed.
As of right now, it's just in dialogue. It's going to be discussed in, you know, a couple more meetings, and maybe we'll have a better idea. I mean, it's a great idea. I mean, it's having a food truck court would be really cool. But you have to nail down the schedule. You'd have to nail down the enforcement of the schedule and how things work, and, you know, who's going to do that, and, you know, timing. You know, people don't want to move their food cart every 12 to 24 hours. It's a lot of work.
There's not a set date for a follow-up meeting with the city, but Million expects the city's food truck plan will be the topic of meetings to come. Governor Mike Dunleavy announced yesterday that layoff notices are being sent to state workers. He said that's because the budget the legislature passed is, quote, defective, unquote, because it won't go into effect by July 1st.
Unfortunately, by law, layoff notices have to be sent out by 4 p.m. today, and they've been sent out notifying folks that the potential for layoff is real.
The governor said many functions of state government will shut down. His office said that essential public health and public safety employees will continue to work. The administration didn't immediately announce what programs would be shut down and how many state workers would be laid off, but it said the numbers would be in the thousands. Dunleavy said the failure of two motions caused the problem. One would have allowed the budget to take effect on July 1st, the first day of the new state budget year. The other would draw from the constitutional budget reserve. Dunleavy called on legislatures to reach a compromise by the end of the special session today. If they're not successful, he said he would call the legislature back into a special session starting on Wednesday. The effective date clause fell four votes short of the necessary number, which means the law wouldn't go into effect until September. The CBR vote failed by 6 votes. Dunleavy says he hopes legislative leaders will listen to all members.
So it's my hope and the hope of Alaskans that some of the maneuvers and brinksmanship that crafted this particular budget could be put aside and a budget be crafted that benefits all Alaskans, everyone working together, because we're running out of time.
The Department of Law advised the governor that state spending under the budget bill cannot be made until the bill goes into effect, 90 days after it becomes law. It takes 2/3 of both legislative chambers to agree to have a different effective date. The Department of Law said there are exceptions to meet constitutional obligations like maintaining Alaskans' health and safety or to comply with federal requirements. House Speaker Louise Stutes, a Kodiak Republican, said Dunleavy ignored 4 decades of previous legal advice and longstanding precedent in announcing the shutdown. She said the House majority is ready to reaffirm its votes for the budget in hopes that the minority will join us, she said. It could be fixed by today. Legislative leaders were negotiating yesterday. Lawmakers who voted against the budget have criticized how the permanent fund dividend is funded. They also want a larger dividend. The budget includes a $525 dividend without the CBR draw passing. If it had passed, the dividend would have been $1,100. But some legislators support paying a dividend of roughly $3,500, the amount under a formula in a 1982 state law. Dunleavy has proposed a change to the formula that would lead to a $2,350 dividend, half of the planned draw from the permanent fund's earnings reserved. But legislators who worked on the budget are concerned that drawing more than planned from the permanent fund's earnings would start the state down the path of spending down the earnings reserve and would threaten the permanent fund's future. Raven Alaska says it will buy 50 electric planes from the California-based company Airflow when they come onto the market. Airflow's planes will use batteries instead of gas to power their engines. But as KDLL Sabine Pooks reports, the company first has to finalize its aircraft design.
Airflow CEO Mark Ostman says he hopes to have Airflow's planes ready by 2025.
And my feeling is, you know, if we can build an aircraft that's successful in Alaska, it could be successful anywhere in the world.
The planes are electric versions of short takeoff and landing aircrafts, the kind of small planes you might see private pilots flying around Alaska. Ostman says they'll be able to fit 9 passengers each. They're not meant to replace Raven's existing airplanes, which are larger Dash 8 planes. Raven has service to Kenai and 12 other airports around Alaska. Instead, Ostman says these planes are designed for smaller airports and towns. That's partly because electric aircraft technology is more scalable. The internal combustion engines that planes currently use don't scale down to smaller aircraft well, Ostman says.
Whereas electric motors scale down very nicely, so we can put smaller electric motors with small propellers all around the aircraft to accomplish different things.
Ostman also says the planes will need half the length of a typical runway for taking off, which could make them optimal for more rugged runways. The batteries in Airflow's planes are not unlike electric vehicle batteries, but Ostman says their battery packs are designed differently to fortify them even more against fires. Early electric planes will have ranges of 100 miles. Some of Airflow's planes will be hybrids. Those will be able to fly for 500 miles.
Sort of think of it as a Prius, as a first step towards an all-electric car.
Raven CEO Rob McKinney says Airflow approached Raven a few months ago to talk about their plan. He says he was excited to sign on, in part because the smaller planes could allow Raven to serve new destinations in Alaska.
I've been a big supporter of electric aviation for over a decade now. I just truly believe that is the future of smaller aircraft, especially in the beginning.
He also says the electric planes could save Raven money. It takes a lot of gas to turn combustion engines on and off. That can add up for short flights. The technology still has a ways to go, and Airflow isn't the only company developing electric plane technology or signing agreements with airlines. American Airlines just said it plans to buy electric aircraft from UK-based Vertical Aerospace. Ostman says Airflow has signed agreements with other flight companies that operate in Alaska, too, though he wouldn't say which ones. Airflow is currently working on simulations and smaller model aircrafts. The next step is to build a proof of concept from an existing aircraft, Ostman says. When the aircraft are ready, Raven will get them piecemeal, not all at once. McKinney envisions using the planes as a launching pad for pilots' careers.
And it's part of our larger scheme, whereas there's going to be a nationwide pilot shortage. So it's part of our plan to create our own flow of pilots into our Dash 8 fleet by having a fleet of smaller aircraft as a launching point for pilot careers.
At the same time, Ostman says the battery technology will be getting better and cheaper. That, he says, could make plane tickets more affordable in the long run. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.
A new smartphone app is hitting the market on Monday, with the potential to transform the debate over Alaska's ocean resources. Skipper Science will allow users along Alaska's entire coastline to contribute observations about changes in fish and animal populations, which can then be collected and quantified as data for Alaska's science-based resource management. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report.
Anywhere the Alaska Board of Fisheries meets, there is always a certain amount of frustration among some of those who testify because their years of experience, sometimes over many generations, doesn't seem to carry much weight in management decisions, which tend to be driven by data. In Sitka, this is particularly acute around herring season, where subsistence harvesters have noted drastic declines in the abundance of the species over many decades, while 40-odd years of data collection by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game suggests everything is okay. This is Coho clan leader and tribal elder Herman Davis testifying before the Board of Fish in Sitka in 2015.
I wonder if all the scientists that are here can figure out what's going to happen when the herring is gone.
Skipper Science was created for exactly this purpose. Developed by the Aleut community of St. Paul Island, it's a way for Alaska's harvesters and managers to at least speak the same language.
How do we take what has historically been called anecdotal and create something, some structure around it, the rigorous, you know, scientific repeatability.
Lauren Devine is the director of ecosystem conservation for the Aleut community of St. Paul, the tribal government of St. Paul Island in the Bering Sea. Devine and a team of collaborators have built the Skipper Science app in an attempt to elevate the hundreds, thousands of informal yet meaningful environmental observations by fishermen and others into hard numbers that can be brought to the Board of Fish or to the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council or to any of the agencies that make decisions more on numbers than on impressions. Scaled up over many, many harvesters, the observations of someone like Herman Davis can carry the weight of scientific data.
This is the way that an Indigenous person takes on life and living and engaging in traditional harvests and relationships with the ecosystem. It is very non-quantitative, and so we're very far behind the times, really. But yet there's no weight that's historically been given and the respect given to the more social science, non-Western scientific side of things. And so we're really working to shift that paradigm.
Devine and the Aleut community of St. Paul are not new to this. About 15 years ago, the tribal government established the Indigenous Sentinels Network to monitor changes in animal populations and the environment in the Bering Sea. They've since developed a half dozen apps and utilities, one of which is called Citizen Science. Skipper Science is built on the Citizen Science platform, but the goal is to make it coast-wide, from the Beaufort to Baja, as Devine says. To extend their reach, the Aleut community of St. Paul needed a partner.
So my name's Lindsay Bloom, and I'm based out of Juneau, Alaska. And I do work for a nonprofit organization called Salmon State.
Lindsay Bloom works within Salmon State's Salmon Habitat Information Program, or SHIP, a coastwide advocacy organization. Salmon State and the Aleut community of St. Paul have similar goals, quantifying informal observation.
To help bring fishermen's voices and perspectives and knowledge, information to the table when it comes to decision-making at the state or federal level.
Bloom and her husband are drift gill netters. She's been using the beta version of Skipper Science. The way she explains it, the app takes something that in the past might have just been a few minutes of dock talk after a fishing trip and compiles it into a database.
It could be a marine mammal sighting. It could be a change in water temperature that's unusual. It could be algae blooms. There's many, many sort of categories of data. You'll just pull up your app. You'll hit a button that says record an observation. For my phone, in my case, it actually just loads in my GPS coordinates right then and there. And I can describe what I'm seeing and how it's different from what I've seen in the past and perhaps take a picture and upload that as well and send it in.
The Skipper Science app works anywhere, whether or not it's connected to the internet. Observations will be cached until users are back in range. Individual observations are also private and password protected, so users can go back in and review past observations. The overall data set, however, is the property of what Lauren Devine is calling the Skipper Science community. Devine and other researchers will compile it and prepare reports as needed based on the information. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Dungeness crab prices to fishermen are on a big upswing. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Prices for all crab continue to soar, and that bodes well for Dungeness crab fisheries at Southeast Alaska and Kodiak, areas that last year saw big catches. Kodiak's fishery opened on May 1st, and so far, over 68,000 pounds have been landed by just 8 boats, compared to 29 last year. The Kodiak price this season was reported at $2.75 a pound for the crab that weigh just over 2 pounds on average. That compares to a 2020 price of $1.85 for a catch of nearly 3 million pounds, the highest in 30 years. The Kodiak pulls are skimpy, though, averaging just 2 crab per pot. Kodiak's dungies are very cyclical, and the fishery could be tapping out the tail end of a peak. This summer will tell the tale. Southeast crabbers dropped pots for the summer Dungeness fishery on June 15th. That could see 190 or more permit holders on the grounds. Crabbers won't know until month's end how much they can pull up after managers assess catch and effort information. Last season's combined summer and fall fisheries produced nearly 6.7 million pounds, just shy of the Dungeness record of 7.3 million pounds set in 2002. Southeast crabbers averaged just $1.72 a pound last season, down by more than a dollar. Elsewhere, California crabbers fetched record prices for their Dungeness crab in a fishery that saw low landings and a shortened season. The fleet of 359 crabbers fetched $6.02 a pound for a catch of just 3.6 million pounds, down 10 million from the previous year. The value of this year's California fishery was $18.7 million, down from nearly $46 million in 2020. Find links at AlaskaFishRadio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods in Kodiak. I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 18th day of June, the year 2021. Sun rose today at 5:07. It won't set again until 11:14, giving us 18 hours and 7 minutes of daylight. That's a gain of 24 seconds compared to yesterday. A record low on this day was 35, set in the year 2000. And a record high was 79, set in 2013. Currently 48 degrees. It's been 48 degrees all day long, although it does say 49 on our thermometer outside the station here. We're looking for this rain to go on until about 1 a.m. tonight. East wind to 10 miles per hour today and tonight and tomorrow. 50% chance of rain tomorrow. Cloudy skies, the high near 53. We're looking for a high near 52 here in Kodiak today. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 2:34 this afternoon. That will be 2/3 of a foot, followed by a high tide at 9:21 p.m. of 7.3 feet. Over on the west side, your next low tide will be at 3:14 p.m. and be 1.8 feet, and your high tide will be at 9:43 this evening and be 12.2 feet. Mariners, be aware that we have a small craft advisory through Saturday in the Shelikof. Northeast wind to 30 knots right now in the Shelikof, seas to 11 feet. Northeast 20 tonight, seas coming down to 8 feet, but northeast 25 tomorrow and seas coming back up to 9 feet. Saturday night, northeast 30 again, seas to 11 feet, and seas to 11 feet on Sunday as well with north winds to 30 knots in the Shelikof. Considerably less wind on the east side. For Chiniac and Marmot Bays, we have east 15 today, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, look for northeast 10 becoming east 15 in the afternoon, seas to 3 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, northeast 20 right now, and seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, look for northeast 15, seas to 4 feet in Marmot Bay. The Kodiak History Museum will host local artist Woody Koning. That actually started at noon. It goes till 2 p.m. at the Kodiak History Museum. Koning is a longtime resident of Kodiak Island, currently living and creating in Chiniac. KHM is honored to display an array of his art, which captures the beauty of Calson Bay through a variety of mediums. In addition to viewing Koenig's pieces, the community is invited to hear personal stories and insight behind the art for places such as Roslyn Beach, Thumbs Up, and Elephant Rock, as shared by the artist during this event. And again, that's going on right now until 2 p.m. at the Kodiak History Museum. And if you're unable to attend today's event, though, the Koenig's work will be displayed free of charge through June 30th through KHSM's regular hours of operation. That's Wednesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 6, date issued June 17th at 10 a.m. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Friday, June 18th, until 9 p.m. Saturday, June 19th in the following areas in the inner and outer upper station sections of the Alitak District. Waters will be open to the stream terminus of Olga Creek, stream number 257304. As previously announced, there will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Thursday, June 17th, until 9 p.m. Saturday, June 19th, in the following areas. In the Outer Iqaluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, in the Cape Alitak, Humpy Deadman, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. Following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, Duck Bay, and Izuit Bay sections of the Afognak District, Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Closed waters are currently reduced until further notice in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406, and in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, and to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821, and in Katoy Bay to the fish and game markers located at Little Katoy Bay and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are as shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org. KMXT is supported in part by Orion's Mountain Sports, featuring equipment, clothing, and footwear for your outdoor lifestyle. Orion's Mountain Sports, located at 1247 Mill Bay Road. Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the June 18th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. These wet days sure make it easy to appreciate the sunny skies we enjoyed earlier in the month, don't they? But it's that combination of wet weather and sun that makes Kodiak the Emerald Isle. Such lush colors we have these days. The wildflower meadows are full of not only green, but the purples and blues of lupins, rose orchis, wild geraniums, shooting stars, and more. And the chocolate lilies are in bloom too. A medium-sized lily with rich chocolate brown petals. Such a beautiful flower. It's really too bad that it smells like old socks and gym shoes. The bulbs of the chocolate lily look a little like rice. In fact, the bulbs are edible and have been used from ancient times to today as a food source. You can eat them raw or boil them and use oil to season them. Luckily, that old sock smell limits itself to the flower of the chocolate lily. Although we often think of solstice as happening on June 21st, for us this year, it officially happens at 7:32 p.m. on Sunday, June 20th.
That's the moment where the Earth's North Pole is pointed most toward the sun, and we enjoy a day that is a titch over 18 hours long. 18 hours, 6 minutes, and 59 seconds here in Kodiak. Those long sunsets that come around this time of year are just wonderful. The perfect accompaniment to a walk in the woods or along the shore, or sitting by a campfire gazing in the distance. Nothing quite like it. Keep your eyes open while you're out and about. There are babies everywhere. Little gulls, little sandpipers, even little ducklings crossing the road. Admire and marvel at it all from a distance. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.